Good morning. You guys doing all right? It's a beautiful, fantastic day. And some of y'all hopefully were up late watching the Astros. Anybody? Come on. Bregman's the man. I'm an Astros fan, and I'm excited that we actually have Pesach Walicki coming in. Listen, y'all need to be there for a couple reasons. Y'all know why we come to church, right? If you think that you come to church because it like, should be a weekly obligation or that, like, I personally think it is. My parents raised me. Every time the church doors were open, we were there. I'm actually very grateful for it because it builds consistency and a solid foundation and helped me, even in the times that I didn't want to, go out of habit, and it helped lay the foundation. That's a good thing. But can I tell you the one of the greatest benefits of getting plugged in, not just attending, but getting plugged into a church, is that you get to be able to celebrate life with people and do life with people, which is what we're going to be doing when Rabbi Walicki's in. It's not like a service. It's going to be a time of teaching, and here's what we're teaching on. And a lot of y'all probably don't even know this. The Old Testament, God lines out in the Old Testament festivals. And so Rabbi Walicki is teaching on how to understand, what's the point of a party that God established. And I like that. Anybody else like to party? Like to have fun? That's the whole point. Like, we're understanding that God in the Old Testament established parties for the whole country. What is that about? And we get to, on Tuesday night, also watch Game 6. So come, bring some food. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm really looking forward to it. Also, he's one of the smartest people I've ever met, honestly. And I've met a lot of smart people. The guy's a genius. It's going to be a lot of fun, and I get to watch the Astros prayerfully beat the Nationals. There is a problem. How many Astros fans do we have? Come on. Good. I need you there. Here's why. Because Pesach grew up in Montreal, and if you know baseball history, Montreal was, the Expos were sold to who? The Nationals. He's a Nationals fan. I told him that's harder to explain than him being Orthodox Jewish. We're gonna have some fun today, so let's get started. Y'all ready? This whole series is on surrendering to the deep. Let me straighten that up. Not that I'm OCD, but I am. Surrendering to the deep, bringing depth to our spiritual life. I want you to grow deep. Listen, if you think that your relationship is so personal that it's just between you and God, let me tell you right now, you're gonna have a very shallow relationship, because the whole point of growing deep is growing together, because God didn't institute a religion just between you and him. He called an entire nation his people, and he established festivals and opportunities for them to connect and celebrate together. So part of us going together deep is this. You ready? Here it is. Number one, we've got to choose. We must choose to go deep. It's a we thing, not a me thing. And if your relationship with God is a me thing and not a we thing, let me tell you right now, you're missing the vast majority of the fun that God has for us in doing life together. We have to choose to go deep. That's the first message that I spoke on choosing. We have to choose it. It's a choice. And here's why. And here's the reality. It's just true. You have as much of God as you want. I don't say that like me up here, you down there. I say that convictingly. This message convicted, today's message convicted the fire out of me. I've got to choose to go deep, because we all have as much of God in our life as we want. That's a scary thing. We've got to choose to go deep. That's number one. Here's the second thing. We have to receive to go deep. I have to be able to receive the truth that God knows me and loves me. I can receive this truth. I'm a sinner, and I need forgiveness, and I need salvation. I need that, Lord. I need you. I can receive that, but I also, and here's where I've struggled, if I'm just transparent, received the truth that I'm a son, that I'm loved, that I'm valued by him, that he thinks good things about me, that he has a plan for me. We have to choose to go deep with him, and we have to receive to go deep with him. But today, we're talking about giving. We have to give to go deep with God, because the Christian life begins with choosing to receive God into our heart and our life. It's Jesus. I receive you. I receive your forgiveness. It begins with receiving. But there's something that happens when we give. Do y'all like to give? Have you ever given to somebody and it's made you feel better than if you'd have gotten something from them? Because there's a, come on, have y'all gonna talk to me today? Have you ever done something for somebody? You've served somebody and like you're like, oh man, that was amazing. I'd love that. I got to help somebody in need. You were able to give. And let me just tell you that we have to be willing to give to go deep. Three things that we have to give. Here's the first one. You ready? We have to be willing to give our time. Now, this is an inherently tricky thing. And it's because our perception of time is linear. Like, it's start here, here, and here. Like, it's linear. Like, we live life in a linear fashion. My wife warned me. She said, okay, you sound crazy sometimes. Please don't sound crazy. So if I sound crazy, y'all help me out. But I want us to understand that if we're going to go deep, we have to be willing to give God our time. And that is more than just an understanding of time and the fashion with which we are familiar, which is linear. Because here's what I want us to get. And we know this to some degree. So hopefully I don't come across wacky or crazy. Is that all right if I do, though? Is it? Come on, y'all validate me here. Yeah. It's okay, good. Everybody wants to give God their past. I know I look at the past and go, there's a lot of things, God, I want to give you because there were a lot of things that happened that shouldn't have happened that did. And I want to give God my past. I want to give him both good and bad, but I'm really especially happy to give him the bad. Isn't that true? Is it? These are not rhetorical questions. Isn't that true? I want to give God my past, but I can't ever go back, can I? You can't go back. If you could go back, how many of you would do some things different? I would. I do a lot of things different. There's some good things that I would leave the same. Like my wife, like getting married to my wife. I would leave that the same. But there's a lot I would not change, like being married to her. I would change how I was being married to her. Y'all know what I'm talking about, men? Everybody that said yes was a woman. Did y'all hear that, man? Did y'all hear that? Yes, yes. Y'all answering for your husbands. We'd go back and change the past. And then we find ourselves often so focused on the future. Like, oh, wow, there's this amazing thing. I'm like, God, I want to give you my past. God, I want to give you my future. Listen, we should give God our past. And we should be willing to give God our future. But the reality is you ain't never going back. And here's the other reality. My wife said, don't say this. I'm going to say it anyway. I'm going to explain it, though. You can give God your future, and you should, but I want you to understand something, that your future is a fallacy, because unless you got into a DeLorean, hit 88 miles an hour, and you showed up, ain't nobody here ever lived in the future. Is that right? Nobody's lived in the future, because I know a lot of people who have, even though they're like the future, because the future, like, what is the future? Have y'all ever thought about that? I say this to my kids. I've said it many times. We're living in the future. Have y'all ever felt that way? The future is just what people thought in the past revealed in the present. Because the past, you're undoing that. The future is like, it's hopeful, it's wishful, but we can't live in the future. We don't get to go back and change our past. It is what it is, and the future is what it's going to be. And the only thing that we actually have is the right here, right now. And it's a gift. That's why it's called the present. Am I willing to give God my right now? In preparing for this message, this is what God spoke to me. He said, I want all of you, all the time, for all time. Am I willing to give God my right now? In my prayer journal, one of the things that I wrote down is I need to let my feet be Let my heart be where my feet are. May my heart, my mind, my soul be where my feet are. Because here's what I found in giving God my time, that time is invariably always attached to a location. I want you to think about that, because that's kind of crazy too. Like, time and location are related. They are, because every moment of your present, every moment of your life, every second, every minute, every hour, every day, every week, every month, every year, they are all attached to a location. Location and time go together. And if you don't believe me, why don't you fly to London and see what time it is right there? Because location has a relationship with time. Does this make sense on a crazy person level? But it does. Listen to me, it does. And so if I say, God, I'm gonna give you my time, what oftentimes I've meant is, Lord, I'm gonna give you my morning devotion time. God, I'm gonna give you my time where I pray for my kids before I go to bed. I'm gonna give you my time on Sundays. I'm gonna give you my time during the week when I'm working, doing your ministry, Jesus. I'm giving you my time. But can I tell you, what God really wants is our location. That means everywhere that our feet trod, every path that we take, every moment of every day, that we allow him to lead us. And our location is a big indicator of what's going on in our heart and us giving God our time. Because there's some locations that you probably shouldn't be. Whoa, I'm not giving God that time. I'm like, what do you mean? Like, what you, because you should not go there. You should not walk there. You should not be at the, you, am I making sense at all? Which is why the call of God and the story of God in the Bible is always, like, God is like always focused on geography. Have y'all figured that one out? Have you read the Bible? Let me tell you something. That God he's concerned about geography. Why is that? Because everywhere that you go geographically, guess what? There you are. And he's concerned with people and the purpose and the plan that he has for them. And listen to me carefully, he has a place for people. And that is a time and location issue, but you can't separate the two. Because when you do, you live a divided life. This is my time and my place, and this is God's time and God's place. And listen to me, that's not how God has it for us. We're gonna look at the life of Abraham. We're gonna start with Abram in Genesis chapter 12. I'm gonna try and get through this quickly. Are y'all gonna listen fast? Good. Oh. And I got some little chest thing going on, so y'all gonna have to bear with me, but I'm gonna do this right as I can. This message did just kick my behind. And God spoke to me about, you know, we have to choose to go deep. I have to receive. I've had such problems in receiving to go deep. And I always thought, well, you know what? I'm a giver. Like, I have no problems giving. And then God just wrecked my world, starting with time and location. And he brought me to the life of Abraham. And in Genesis chapter 12, we see the call of God on the father of our faith, Abraham. And this is what God speaks to him. Y'all ready? Genesis chapter 12, verse 1. If you see yellow, that means you're going to say that word with me. You ready? The Lord said to Abram, leave your native, your relatives, and your father's, and now say it like you mean it, and come on, like it's the Astros, and go to the land that I will show you. Let me just tell you right now that the call of God on your life is not for you to attend church more. The call of God on your life is not simply for you to I need to join a small group. I need to be a part of outreach. Let me tell you, the call of God on your life is for you to leave, be willing to leave. His call is always for us to leave our country, our relatives, our family, and go. That's what he called. It's for us to be willing to leave ourselves and go to the place that he has for us. This is a time issue. This is a geography issue, but they are related. And so the Lord said, leave your country, your relatives, your family, go to the land I'll show you. Genesis 12, verse 2. Look at verse 2. Y'all ready? Here we go. I will make you, y'all gotta do better, come on. I will make you into a great nation. I will bless you and make you famous. You'll be a blessing to others. This is what we can know. When we step out and we give God not just a modicum of our time, just a piece of our time, but we say, every moment of every day, my feet are following your path. He's gonna call us to go somewhere. And when we do, we can know this, that there's blessing that follows. Look at verse 3. I'll bless those who bless you. That's nice. I'm gonna curse those who treat you with contempt. That's even better. Some of y'all are not vengeful, I guess. Okay. All the families on earth will be blessed through you. This is key. All the families on earth will be blessed through you. Here's what we see in the heart of God. When we truly give him our time, recognizing that the correlation between time and location means every place that I step, every place that I walk, every place that I tread, God, it's you. you're leading me. And I'm willing to leave my place and go to your place. You just have to say the word. He blesses us. He says, I'm going to bless you. He told Abraham, I'm going to bless you. And then this is key. All the families of the earth will be blessed through you. You know, later he says that your descendants, he tells Abraham this. He says, your descendants are going to be like the dust of the earth. Your descendants, you can look, he says, Abraham, look at the stars. Your descendants are going to be like the stars of the sky. Abraham, look at the seashore. Your descendants are going to be like the grains of sand, and they're going to be blessed because you're following me. This isn't just a proclamation for Abraham. It's for us recognizing when we give God our time, everything changes. Look at verse 4. Y'all ready? So Abram departed as the Lord had instructed. Abram departs. He leaves. He goes. What does that mean for you and for me? If I'm willing to go to church or go to a small group or go and do some outreach, but I'm not willing to go to Africa, I'm not willing to go to Asia, I'm not willing to go to South America, I'm not willing to go to Cameron. Big call. There's a heart issue there. Am I willing to give God my time? I wrote this. You can't fully give God everything unless you're willing to go where he sends you. You can't give God, say, I'm going to give you all of my time, God, and then say no when he calls you to go. Go. So Abraham leaves. Y'all ready? Because I want to throw a monkey wrench in this. This is just what really just jumped out at me. So he goes, Abraham departed as the Lord had instructed. I'm going to read, it's not on the screen. Lot went with him, his nephew. Abram was 75 years old when he left Haran. I'm going to say that again. Abram was 75 years old when he left Haran. You know what God told me with that? You're never too old. You're never too old. He was 75 years old when God showed up and said, oh, you're going to have a bunch of descendants. Guess how many kids Abram had at that point? Goose egg, none, zippo, zilch. This I know that you think that you dried up. You think that there's no way that God can use you. Think that you're old and that you the past has passed you by and there's no future that God has for you. You're wrong. And Abram stepped out and he left. When they arrived in Canaan, Abram traveled through the land as far as Shechem. There he set up camp beside the Oak of Moreh. And at that time, the area was inhabited by the Canaanites. In other words, God took him to a place that was already full of people. And the Lord appeared to Abram and said, I'm going to give this land to your descendants. And Abram built an altar there and he dedicated it to the Lord who appeared to him. This is good, isn't it? He goes to the place that, and God shows up and he sees God there. He's walking through the land to see how big it is. And like he makes a camp, he builds an altar. God appears to him. It's awesome. Has anybody experienced that when God told you, do this, you did it, and you're like, God, it was amazing. You're so awesome when you get there. Has anybody? I have. He built an altar, and then he traveled to the south, and he came to Bethel, and Ai to the east. He built another altar, and he dedicated it to the Lord, and he worshiped the Lord. And he traveled south by stages toward the Negev, towards the desert. And then verse 10 happens. You ready? He followed God to the place that God said, I'm going to bless you. And he's there for a very brief amount of time. God shows up for real, but he still didn't have any kids. And then that blessing turned into this. At that time, a severe famine struck. We're going to start it over. At that time, a severe famine struck. It struck the land of Canaan, the place that God had promised him, forcing Abram to go down to Egypt where he lived as a foreigner. Listen to me carefully. You got to know this, that when you give God your all and you say, Lord, I'm giving you my time and every place my feet touch, I'm going to live for you, that he's going to bless you. But sometimes the blessing doesn't look like that. Sometimes the promise looks like poverty. It looks like you're in the place where a severe famine struck. Sometimes it feels that, look, Abram was forced to go down to Egypt where he lived as a what? He lived as a foreigner. Sometimes the promise of God doesn't mean that you're always in the place of God, even though that's where your heart wants to be. Sometimes you're in a place because of a famine. You're in a place where you feel like you're on the outside and a foreigner. Have you ever felt that way? Have you ever felt that way at church? I have. I felt that way at this church, and I'm the pastor before, because there are seasons and times that in my going for God, a famine strikes and I feel like I'm a foreigner in the place that God had promised me. And sometimes it's not like it's not like I'm even here, even though I may be standing in the middle of it. I hope this makes sense to you guys. Does it?
Yes.
I have to be willing to, regardless of how I feel in a moment, continually trust God that his promises are true, and I will always go, because everywhere that I tread my feet, every place that I am, I'm giving 100% to him. This is a time issue. I hope this makes sense. Y'all, does it make sense at all?
Yes.
Good. Okay, good. Here's the second thing that we got to give. We got to give God our talent. Everybody wants to give God their weakness. And I get that. That's a good thing. The Bible actually says, it says, in our weakness, he is made strong. Like, we should be willing to give God our weakness, because I'm happy to give him my sin, my shortcomings, my shame, the areas where I really mess things up. Like, I've really screwed this up, God. This isn't a strength of mine. Like, this is my weakness. I give it to you. Like, that is redemption, because God will take the sin and he forgives it, but he doesn't just forgive. He brings redemption. That means he turns it around. And I love the fact that we can be a body. We can be a body where people can fail well. And every parent here, make sure that your home is a place where your children can fail well, because fail they will. And in church, everybody on some level has failed before. Christians, that you've been serving God for a long time, have you done it with perfection? Boy, that sounded British, didn't it? Have you done it with perfection? I think not. No, because we fail. And we love to give our strength, as we should. We give our weaknesses. God, take my weakness. Here it is. But can I tell you, there's something more powerful than the redemption of God in our weaknesses. It's us being able to recognize and surrender our strengths to him. Because when you give God your weakness, this isn't bad, but it's all about you, where you've messed up, where you need the strength of God in your life. And that's a good thing. But at the end of the day, surrendering your weaknesses is about you recognizing your need for God's strength in your life. So powerful, so good. But something happens when you give God your strength. Every person in here, sitting here, every person in here, you are gifted and you are called by God. God's wired you with strength. And when you give him your strengths, he uses you to impact others. That's why we do spiritual gifts. The spiritual gifts discovery, actually this coming Saturday, we have spiritual gifts discovery. And it helps people discover how God's wired them. And we've been having to do them more often because people are wanting to do it, and it's a commitment. It's like 5 hours on a Saturday. It's so worth it, because it helps you to recognize the strength that God's given you so that you can operate in it and you change the world around you. I looked at Abraham, and as I was preparing for this message, going, how did Abraham do this? How did he give his talent to you? You know, when Abram was back living in the land of Canaan, there were wars that were going on all around him. And in chapter 14, we see where this war has begun to invade his family. And he still doesn't have any kids, but he's got a nephew that's hung around. But the nephew gets caught up in the crossfire of this war. And him and his whole family and all of his servants, all the people that were with him, they all get taken captive. And then we see this really unique situation where Abraham steps in. And I think we get a glimpse of Abraham's strength, Abraham's gifting, Abraham's talent. It's in Genesis chapter 14. In verse 14, we see this. When Abram heard that his nephew Lot, remember there's a war raging around them, had been captured, they're just caught in the crossfire. Y'all ready? You're going to read this with me. He mobilized the 318 trained men. They'd been born into his household. And he pursued Kedorlaomer's army. I don't know how to pronounce it. Kedorlaomer. K's army. It's okay. If your pastor doesn't know how to pronounce the name, you don't have to worry about pronouncing it either. Then he pursued K's army until he caught up with them at Dan. But here's what struck me. Abram was walking to a place that he thought this is just going to be God's blessing. He's going to bless his descendants. He's still childless. He says, God says to him, I'm going to bless those who bless you. I'm going to curse those who curse you. Do you think he was worried about war? No, he wasn't. But he obviously had a gifting of leadership in his life because he had 318, what's this word right here? Trained men. He had 318 what kind of men? Trained men. Y'all ever trained dogs? Have y'all? Has anybody here ever trained dogs? Is it difficult sometimes to train a dog? Yes or no? It can be, but people aren't like dogs. You know what people are like? It's like cats. Anybody here ever train a cat? Now, you can't train a cat to do nothing because it's got a mind of its own. You can't train a cat. Like, I've got, how many cats do we have? More than three. We have three too many. We have three cats. I can't train those cats to do nothing. Like, I can, like, they can be hungry, meow, meow, like, open the door, like, hey, here's your food. And they're going to be like, I don't like it because they're cats. They're the spawn of Satan. No, I'm joking. I don't mind cats as long as they got a job. He mobilized the 318 trained men. He didn't know a war was going to be breaking out. He just operated in his gifting to train people. It doesn't even say that they were trained warriors. They were just trained. He had the ability to not just train them, but to mobilize them to do what? To pursue an army. Now listen to me. The last time I checked, an army had more than 318 men. This is some sort of gifting that he has to not just be able to train men, to make them believe that God's with them and that they're going to take on an army and win. Look at the next verse. And they did. They won. It says, Abram recovered all the goods that had been taken, and he brought back his nephew Lot with his possessions and all the women and other captives. Here's what you need to know. When you give God your strengths, your giftings, your talents, it's always to bring life and freedom to other people. You have to choose to go deep with God. You have to choose to receive the truth of who you are. And you have to be willing to give the best of you, not just the worst of you, to God. That like spoke to me. Because so often that we just focus on God, take my brokenness. God takes your brokenness and he redeems it. But can I tell you what he really desires? Your strengths. Because everybody here has the ability to bring freedom and life to the captives. He'll use you. Maybe you're an encourager and he'll use you to encourage somebody. Maybe you're an administrator and you can put things in order so that things they function correctly so that a group outing is now not chaotic hell road trip. Have y'all ever been on those that are like completely unplanned or like a party that's, have you ever been to a party that has like everything to be a party? Like it's a train wreck because there's nothing that's been done that needs to be done. And instead of it being a fun time, it's a frustrating one because the food's not there or it's cold or I'm just me. We've all been there. But maybe administration's your gift. Maybe God's given a prophetic bend on you. That means that you can clearly see the path that he's charted, not just for you, but for other people. And you're going to be an encouragement to them. When you give God your weaknesses, he brings redemption and life, forgiveness and freedom to you. But when you give God your strengths, he does the same thing through you to other people. And that's way more fulfilling. And the third thing, the final thing, God's called us to give him not just our time and our talent, but also our treasure. Our treasure. I wrote this, Abraham gave his wealth to God. And I really started thinking, what is it that makes a person wealthy? And I came up with two things that make a person wealthy. The first one's really simple. We know money makes them wealthy. Yeah, it does. Wealthy in the world of the eyes, in the eyes of the world. But there's something else. And by the way, it's like 1,000 degrees in here. If we can turn this. Am I the only one that's sweating? Maybe it's just because I'm moving, gyrating up on stage, preaching this message, but I'm hot. Money brings a modicum of wealth. But have you ever heard the saying, if you don't have your health, you've got nothing? Y'all ever heard that? Or maybe you've heard it, if you got your health, you got everything. You know who normally says, if you got health, you got everything? As somebody who's sick. Because I'm just telling you right now, I could say, listen, right here, I've got the winning Powerball ticket for $1 billion. Okay, let's make it realistic. 500 million. It's the winning ticket. And I will give it to somebody, but when you take it, you are going to be cursed with horrific health and you will never be able to enjoy that. Listen, when you got your health, you got everything. And so this is what the Lord really just spoke to me. And like, I'm called to give my wealth. How do I give my wealth of health to the Lord? And can I just say that this is in the middle of my wife walking through a difficult physical battle that we've been struggling with for over 2 years now, and seizures, and she hasn't driven in over 2 years, and it's been a struggle, and it's been a battle. But can I tell you, when you are able to get to the place where you can give God the best of who you are, the healthiest of who you are, it comes across like this. It comes across as gratitude. Lord, thank you. Lord, thank you. Lord, thank you. Do I recognize where we are physically? Yeah. Like, I'm healthy. My wife's dealing with junk and dealing with medication and the side effects of all that. But can I tell you, at some point, you have to be able to be okay with the place where you are in your health and be able to give that to God as an offering and say, Lord, it's yours. That's part of the wealth that you have. The fact that you were able to sit here today is a testimony to your health, regardless of the degree that you find yourself in health. Are you able to give that treasure back to God in the form of gratitude? And here's how you do it. You say, Lord, I'm thankful, but you have to mean it. And let me tell you, to be able to do that in the middle of a trying physical situation, and can I just say that we're there, Pastor Josh and Kelly, who was just up here before me, Pastor Josh and Kelly, with Kelly going through stage 4 cancer, with another couple on staff, Herman and Rhonda Williams, and Herman out today with some disturbing things, you can still, listen to me, you can still give God in faith with a sincere heart. You can give that health to him. That's a treasure. We're body, soul, and spirit. Physically, we can give two things as an act of faith, our health and our wealth. For Abraham, we see the first instance of him giving after this battle. It's the continuation of the battle. They won. And then this guy that we don't see anywhere else, Melchizedek, he's the king of Salem. And many, many theologians believe that he's a picture of Jesus. And we look at Galatians 14, 17 through 18. This is what we see. After Abram returned for his victory, remember where he saved Lot? Melchizedek, the king of Salem and a priest of the God Most High, brought Abram some bread and wine. Look at verse 19. It said, Melchizedek blessed Abram with this blessing. Blessed be Abram by God Most High, creator of heaven and earth, and blessed be God Most High who has defeated your enemies for you. Look at verse 20b. Then Abram gave Melchizedek a tenth of all the goods that he had recovered. All throughout the Bible, we see, from Genesis through Revelation, we see the call to trust God. This is a faith issue with our finances. And if you've been here for any length of time at all, you know I seldom talk about finances. But can I just say, I unabashedly do that now, because for me, and the health scares that we've had, which have been actually pretty substantial through the years, we've given that to God, and he's met us, and it's built our faith. And when you choose not to give financially, which is freedom, you can do that. You have the freedom to do that. But let me just tell you, when we follow the biblical example of tithing, giving a tenth of our income, that's a step of faith. And it's scary for a lot of people. And God doesn't need your money. The church doesn't need your money, because it's Jesus who builds the church. But when we come from a place of faith, give God our first and our best, because we see that in Abraham's example and all through the Bible. In the New Testament, they didn't tithe. Actually, they brought everything. They shared it communally. But when we give our first and our best, that treasure in our body, like the physical treasure, our health and our physical wealth, both of those are an act of faith. And I think people rob themselves of the blessing of God when they fail to trust him in their faith with their health, and when they fail to trust him in their faith with their finances. The Bible's actually clear. It says that God opens up the heavens and he blesses us when we trust him with both. We've had diagnoses that have been pretty disturbing, one of them saying you should never have children again, another one that was probably equally as impacting, and then a third one with what my wife's walking through now. And you know what? We're giving in faith. Even when financially we didn't have money, like our income and expenses didn't add up, we stepped out in faith and trusted God. And can I say, I'm blessed beyond measure. When you give God your time, when you give him your talent, when you give him your treasure, he blesses. Abraham gave God of his wealth. I pray that you do as well. Here's the third thing, the second part of this. Abraham gave God, we're body, we're soul, we're spirit. The body physically give, the spirit. Abraham gave his heart to God. It was a soul thing. When God says go in Genesis 12, the Lord said to Abraham, leave your native land, leave your country, leave your people, leave your relatives. He had enough faith and trust in God to be able to step out. And that was a heart issue. And let me just tell you that we need to have a heart issue. God's heart is for you to trust him. And if you think that just showing up on Sundays or getting plugged in, it's a heart thing. And let me just say that people can sniff out insincerity a mile away, and so can God. Y'all like infomercials? Does anybody watch infomercials? Momentarily watch infomercials for entertainment. I do. Every now and then I'm going to watch an infomercial. You want to know why? Because then people crazy. And it's like, everything's like over the top and like overdone. It's like, look at that chicken cook. That thing's amazing. Come on, everybody. I love this audience. They're so good because they're paid, you know? And they're like, oh, taste that chicken. And like, oh my gosh, the best chicken I've ever eaten in my whole. It's like entertaining for me momentarily. But the thing that I can sniff out is this fake. It's fake. There's something that happens when we do what we do because we have a heart for it. I need to give God that heart, that trust. You know, yesterday, I don't typically watch TV much at all, but yesterday was LSU and then the Astros. And like in between, I'm like, what do I do? Because LSU barely won. Praise God they did. Thank you. And then Coach O gave his amazing post-game interview. I never had a... I love Coach O. He's great. We won. But in between, like I flipped from LSU, and I just have bunny ears, you know? So we flipped to like PBS, and like one of my favorite shows in the whole world happens to be on. I love it. And it was The Joy of Painting with Bob Ross. Y'all think I'm joking. Like, no joke. Like, that was on. I'm like, oh, Bob Ross is on. Tell me if this is not true. I opened up the door to we have a TV room. They have one room with a TV. And I'm like, hey, everybody, Bob Ross is on. Come watch Bob Ross. And we all sat there and watched Bob Ross. The reason I love Bob Ross is because the man's sincere. He believes that is a happy tree that is going to bring joy to everybody. There's something that happens when we give God the treasure of a sincere heart. Because listen to me, he can sniff out a mile away when you are being the infomercial salesman with him. But even the silly, poofy-headed Bob Ross, how many of y'all like Bob Ross? Raise your hand. That's because he's for real. He's for dead now, but he was for real when he was alive. Proverbs 4:23 says, guard your heart, for out of it flows every issue of life. I think this version says, for it determines the course of your life. Guard your heart. Keep a sincere heart. Keep a sincere heart. Give God your wealth physically, financially. Give God your heart and sincerity. And then the last one, Abraham didn't just give his wealth. He didn't just give his heart. Abraham gave his son to God. This is where the rubber meets the road. our time, our talent, our treasure. The greatest treasure that any parent has is their children. Abraham, 75 years old, God calls him, I'm going to make you a great nation. You're going to have descendants like the stars. Follow me. I'll bless you. He does. God shows up, and then he ends up in a place of famine. Then he ends up in the crossfire of war. It's not always easy, but he continued to give him his time. He continued to give him the best of himself. And he gave him his treasure. God fulfilled his promise. And at almost 100 years old, Abraham had a son. One son. God promised him, I'm going to make your descendants like the sea on the seashore. And when he's old, he only has one kid. And God tells him in Genesis 22:2, it says, take your son, your only son. You don't have to read this one with me. Yes, Isaac, whom you've loved so much, and go to the land of Moriah. Go and sacrifice him as a burnt offering on one of the mountains, which I'll show you. Abraham does it. He takes his son, who's more than old enough to understand what's going on, because he even asks his dad, and actually Jewish theologians believe that that Isaac was about 30 years old when this happened. That he asks his dad, like, okay, we're going to the top of this mountain that God showed you, but where's the sacrifice? And Abraham's response is, God will provide. And then God shows him the mountain. And he brings Isaac up, ties him up, lays him on the altar, raises the knife, fully aware of the promise of God, but willing to operate in obedience to God. And he's about to plunge the knife into the chest of his son and kill his promise. More than that, his son. And a voice from heaven says, stop. Don't do it. And he sees off to the side a ram caught in a bush. I imagine it must have just walked up there and got caught. God brought it there. And he unties Isaac and they sacrifice the ram. Are you willing to lay down the thing that's most precious? Everybody has that one thing. God, just don't take that. Just don't take my marriage. Just don't take my kids. Just don't take my parents. Just don't take this. Don't. He always calls you to lay that down. Because you'll never experience the fullness of God until you are willing to lay down all of you. Here's the cool thing. The very spot where Abraham offered Isaac is the exact spot where Jesus was crucified. That's the top of Mount Moriah. It's the highest point in all of Jerusalem. And underneath it's a skull. Nose has fallen off now. Fell off in the late 19th century. But they still have pictures when the nose was there, and it looks like a skull is embedded in the side of the mountain. And I imagine that that was fitting for Abraham to go offer his son up there, the place of death. And then, 2,000 years later, 1,500 years later, Jesus died on that cross for you and for me. The God of the universe came down and gave everything. John 3:16 says, for God so loved that he gave. Our response is to choose him, to give our life to him. Choose, receive his forgiveness, and give our life. Let's bow our heads. Maybe you're here and God's dealing with you and you know that you need to give your life to him. I'm not going to embarrass you or call you out, but if you're here and you say, Pastor, I know that I need to give my life to him. I need to give my life to him. If that's you, just raise your hand. Say, Pastor, this was for me. I need to surrender. Thank you. Thank you. I see you over here. Anybody else? Thank you. I see you over here. We're just all going to pray out loud. Just repeat after me. Say, Dear Jesus, I choose you. I receive your forgiveness. I give you my life. I'm yours. In Jesus' name. Amen. Come on, can we celebrate that? Father, thank you that you are at work in us. Lord, may we give you all. We'll be out of here in about a minute, so don't pack up, don't step out yet. Listen, if God's done something in you, my heart as a pastor is to connect you with people and resources that can help you grow. If God's done something in you, take a moment, take that connection card in the seat back in front of you, and where it says, today I've decided, fill it out, let us know. If there's something that's going on in your life that you want people to stand with you in prayer, fill it out, let us know. On your way out, you can drop it by the boxes on the door, on the way out or at the connection center. You also see the crosses projected on the sidewall. Our ministry team members are there. If you need to pray with somebody today, please don't walk out of here without praying with somebody. That's why they're there. And that's my heart, is to connect you with people who genuinely do care and can stand with you. Because this is so true. We are better together, and we have to know that the best is yet to come. And we can know it when we choose God. We choose him, we receive from him, and then we give to him. So why don't we stand to our feet? Did you have a good time today? Good. Well, we're gonna pray and we'll be dismissed. Father, thank you that we know that in you that the best is yet to come. Thank you that you know every moment of our lives. Father, may we live it for you and give all to you. In Jesus' name, everybody said, amen. Love you guys. God bless. Have a great Sunday.